This is Meadowbrook Magic, episode 5. Welcome back. Fuck Jordan.
Fuck me! You just agreed with me! Okay. I'm right!
Yeah, I agree with you, but you're pissing me off. Okay. This is episode 5.
He's wrong.
When this card is overcosted, right. I'm going to build a deck around it, and I'm going to make
Can I introduce the topic?
First of all, you want to make a combo deck and try and beat me with
Jordan?
I love blue.
I do discard.
I would rain your ass with this deck. You wouldn't even notice all the dispels.
I know more discard cards.
I will put extras.
I'll wait.
You want to beat me in a blue-black fight?
I will do it! Don't worry!
You can't!
I won't do it!
I'm the control combo!
I don't care! I'm going to play it! I'm going to learn it! I'm going to break standards with the overcost!
Oh, this is so many bloopers.
Oh, no! Okay. I'm Mike. That's Jordan. This is Ashwin.
And this is the blooper reel.
No, we're keeping this in because we got to get right into this topic. We have been talking about this fucking card for like an hour now. It is, what the fuck is it called?
Revenge of Necromancy from You Make the Card 4. For those of you who don't understand, this is our third take and we're pissed. Because he's wrong.
No, Jordan, what the fuck he's talking about?
Let me explain. You Make the Card 4 is the fourth time that Wizards of the Coast has run a session where the group of Magic players, basically the community, designs their own card. It's run by a number of polls on the Daily MTG site. First they chose the card type, I believe, then the color, and blah, 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 and eventually gets to the point where a bunch of people, anyone can submit rule text. R&D looks through them, chooses the top 8, and then there was a round-robin face-off where people voted on which one they wanted, and it came down to the winner being Revenge of Necromancy. The card basically states, as an enchantment, whenever an opponent, keyword, an opponent discards a creature, you get a 2/2 black zombie. Whenever an opponent discards a land, you get a black added to your mana pool, and then anything else that is discarded from their hand, you get to draw a card. So
Slaughter Games.
Slaughter Games isn't discard, it's exile.
And it doesn't have a mana cost yet.
So the argument that we've been talking about is what the mana cost should be on this card. It's a fun card. It's meant to be a build-around card. The idea that behind it, when you can look up the article on Daily MTG, but the idea behind when the guy was designing the card is he wanted a card that made it to be more thoughtful when your opponent was discarding, or for you as the opponent, what you chose when you discard. Because usually it's a pretty simple solution. I have an extra land, I'm going to chuck my land. I can't play this card until 4 turns from now, I got pressure on me now, I'm going to discard this, I don't need this. Now you have to think, well, what is going to help me, what's going to be least detrimental to me to discard while being least beneficial to him to discard? Do I not want him to have a card? Do I not want to give him extra mana? Yada, yada, yada. So your whole perception of what to discard changes. Also what cards you're holding on to like keep around. Like if you know someone's running a Liliana of the Veil and you're like, well, I'm going to hold on to this card to discard instead of playing this so I can keep my later card around. It's going to change up the thing and put a lot more thought on both your opponent and make discard a lot more interesting for you to run it. So now, the discussion comes down to,
what should it be costed?
I say that if it's anything over 4, it won't be played, and to be really like fun and playable and useful, it needs to be 3. 1 is ridiculous. 2 could see modern play and possibly even legacy play, but I think 3 is a fair play for it to be in standard and not be broken or way too powerful. He's saying anything less than 5 is just broken and disgusting.
No, I think 4 and 5 should be where it is.
I'm saying 3 is probably the ideal cost for it.
It should be 5. It looks like a 5 cost.
I think 2 cost would be a powerhouse card that could start seeing play into the older formats.
I can almost guarantee you that there's going to be double black in this card.
Oh,
When you look into it, it has the ability to add black.
Yeah, I think it should be double black colorless.
Yeah,
double black colorless.
I think it should be 2 colorless black. That's probably aggressive enough.
That's what I'm
thinking.
That'll
probably see decks.
I agree that it should be 1 colorless or 1 black.
But
it's probably going to be 2 black.
Yeah,
black.
I agree. I think it should be black colorless.
But
from a
game design perspective, you don't want a 1 black this type of enchantment out there.
Really? What are you going to get from
game design perspective?
See, the more I think about this card, like the less I like it because
I really like it. I just don't want to be too high that I'm never going to be able to play around it unless I'm building a real casual, real janky ass deck.
It's got to be an
interesting
It's
meant to be a janky card.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's meant to be a janky card, but it should be a playable janky card. As a community, we came together to design a card that we think is going to be fun, playable, and that, like, we don't want to see as a 50-cent rare that no one ever gets to play.
I like 50-cent rares that you can build around. I think those are worth more to the community than $15 rares that it's so hard to
build. Well, I'm not asking for a 15... formats. I'm not saying that it's going to be a $15 rare that takes over the format. I'm saying at Black Black Colorless, it could be maybe a $4 or $5 rare that's really fun to play around, and, like, it's great. It's great. I don't think it's the kind of card, too, that you're going to want to play set in a deck. You're probably going to want three of.
You don't
want to
play set of this, of course.
No. Right? And so... And I think it could be a lot of fun.
If it's lower cost, then you might want to play set.
Here's my thing. You get no value out of it the turn it's played or until you play another card to work with it.
That's why you build a deck around it.
You build a deck around it. So it's completely functionally useless in your deck until you play it and the turn after you play it, because you're probably going to want to play it as soon as possible.
Yeah. I don't even agree with that.
Well, you might, yes. You might want to play...
I would play Liliana first, even if it's a 3-cost.
Well, alright, if Liliana the Veil is around, which she won't be in Standard much longer, and she's never going to be reprinted, let's face it.
Be Modern, like you said.
But, like, yeah. 3-cost
Modern card.
If you want to talk about it in Modern, I think 3 is even going to be too high cost for this card to be even playable in Modern, but...
It would be a janky-ass deck in Modern, for sure.
It'd be a real janky... there are a lot of powerful 1- and 2-drop discard cards in Modern. Sure, yeah. And you could probably make a really interesting deck around it, and... But I think if it wasn't too costed enchantment, you're gonna try to stay alive in way too fast a format for way too long to start getting benefits way too later.
I also think not even to be too powerful, I think it'd be too unfun to make it a 3-cost for the other player. That, like, the net fun that you're getting out of this card is only for one person.
Well, the thing is, here's the deal.
Fair.
What you get from it is that let's look at the three matchup. This is a combo deck. We're gonna assume it's pretty much played in a, more of a combo-y deck or a control version of a deck that's using discard as
control
the
control combo. Yeah.
So the three matchups that it's basically gonna face, the fourth one is combo, but combo on combo always gets interesting. The three matchups are basically, it's which one everyone can shoot off first. Is aggro, mid range, and control. If it's facing control, it's a combo deck. It's already at a huge disadvantage, which means it needs to start to be able to protect itself. It won't be able to play this card on turn 3 if it's 3-cost. It's going to have to wait till turn 4 or 5.
There's other things that the control deck might want to target before you even target this card.
No, because this deck is the card you're building around. The whole deck won't run well without this card.
Like, the best things about control pieces are pieces that work without the centerpiece even.
Yeah.
So Liliana the Veil does that job. You might want to counter that card.
If I was a control deck and you're hitting me with you wanted to resolve a Liliana the Veil, like,
that's a great card
against
a control deck.
I would love to hit it, but
you don't know.
Yeah, but if it's reasonable in the format, you're gonna know what the deck is. And like,
if I play like Stalker Veil, yeah, there's two cards where you might want to.
Fair, but I still think control is gonna be, because again, even if you then resolve this card, which is gonna be hard to resolve on turn 3 against
it, will be tough to resolve. You're right.
Yes, you now have to resolve other cards around it to get value. And yes, if you resolve any of those discard cards and then get all that value from it, you're going to blow control out of the water. But again, you're being combo-licious, and it's real hard against control to be combo-licious. So let's just face it that against control...
Well, combo decks aren't good against control anyway.
It's a bad matchup, right? Well, here's the thing. It becomes an impossible matchup if you push that enchantment past 3. And so, but we'll say combo loses to control. All right, you're now going against the the aggro deck. You have to get your combo off, or at least use your discard control before they kill you. Which means you need to start taking the game back from them around turn five at the latest. Yeah, right. You were playing this turn 3. You're not reaping value from it until turn 4.
I don't know
4.
If I was playing against aggro, I probably wouldn't play this turn 3.
You'd try and play more defensively, and then
I would have counter spells and kill spells for early.
Right?
And
so
then turn 3 this.
Yeah, but then that's the thing. Aggro runs out their hands so fast that then this card is functionally dead.
I don't think so. I think it gets so much more value out of it even.
Because you force them to keep playing cards out of their hand?
They play cards in hand? All right, kill. Mana Leak, whatever, blah, blah, whatever equivalent of that. Essence Scatter, whatever, what have you.
It just sounds like you're better off playing
it. And then turn 4, they run out of gas, they need to finish it, you mind rot them.
Yeah.
You play before you play before.
But the thing is, when you mind rot, you don't choose. They choose when to discard. So it's like, oh, well, maybe I can draw a card, or maybe I can Yeah, the opponent has the choice.
But that's another thing. Why don't you run a control deck without this card? This card, and then we're saying this at a 3-drop. There's no point. You're saying that this card doesn't do anything against the aggro matchup. You might as well run a straight-up control at a 3-drop. Now we're talking mid-range, where this card would probably do the best. They're still not going to have that many cards in their hand by the time that you start to take over, and then still...
But do you see what I mean by when it's saying... You don't have to play this card at the earliest possible time. In fact, you may not even want to.
Yeah, but the way you're stating it is, like, I would just keep playing other control elements until I work into it.
You want them to run out of gas before you start even comboing.
But why wouldn't you want to play this card?
You can't combo once they're out of gas with this card. You might as well just play a bomb.
I don't know if I would. What if you play this card and play a discard card? Or you're the Whispering
Madness? They have no cards left in hand. Like, so you're saying that this card is functionally... The only way that this card is good against aggro is the sooner you get it out. Like, ideally... Some turn.
You're saying, play it, defend early, play it as soon as possible, mind run the shit out of them.
Otherwise, this card, like, you might as well just run a normal control deck, because it does nothing. Like, you get no value from playing this card.
Because they're out of gas anyway?
Yeah. And then, so you need to play it early. So, like, if you drop this turn two with some sort of, like, Arbor Elf into, Overgrown Tomb, Arbor Elf, then whatever other black source turn two, and then Arbor Elf, tap all three, get this out turn two, you can start
to... That's value, man.
Yeah, then you mind rot them, but they already have, like, a bunch of their turn 3 drop, create good creatures out, but now you have chump blockers, and you know against a strong aggro deck that a 2-2 zombie is going to lose to a lot of their...
Okay, but, like, let's say they're, like, okay, let's say they don't want to give you chump blockers, they give you mana. You're going to have all the discard cards in your hand.
Yeah.
You're going to have creatures in your hand.
That's the thing, the decision's on them, how they want to roll.
But they don't know what's in your hand, and they're losing cards out of it.
Yeah. But so they have, so now that's why it's a good card, because it makes it a fun interactive thing. So the aggro player really has to consider how he wants to run this.
Sure.
So I think it'll make interesting reactions with each other. Whereas if it's higher cost than that, you'll never get to see it in play, and you'll never get there. And then another thing is, so against mid-range and like reanimator decks, most of them are going to want to be discarding and looting by turn 3 or 4. So is using this as a sideboard card, or even against Lot the Troll and stuff, which are all early cards, like, they get their first 2 or 3 turns to do all that and have their fun, and then you come in and stop the shenanigans later. But even then, I'd give you a 2-2 zombie to discard an Angel of Serenity that I'm just going to use to exile it later. It's not that big of a deal.
I just don't see where, like, I still think it would be way too powerful to say, like, a turn 5, Reckless Return for 3, get this much mana, this many creatures, they lose 3 cards, lose 3 life.
Rakdos Returns
are... Or Sire Insanity, turn 6, followed by, like,
but
3 other plays.
Yeah, Sire Insanity is already played as a bomb. He's going to win you games either way.
So, like, at this turn 3, and then, like, 2 other, maybe, like, multi-purpose cards, or even cards that don't even have to do with discard, and then you Sire Insanity, there's no way you lose.
Yeah.
And that's way too early, because then you can be playing your...
So you're talking if the Sign of Insanity is in the format where he is as a 6-drop bomb that you have to still survive to get to play. You're talking about, like, is this card broken, or is it just helping already incredibly powerful cards? Like, there's a lot of cards that can support already and powerful cards.
Well, this card wouldn't be broken without already powerful cards, right? Like, it has to.
Like,
this card is not... We already agreed that it's not...
We just discussing this, that, like, Lightning Bolt is considered one of the most fair and, like, reasonable burn spells. So is Doomblade. You can't argue that.
I don't know Lightning Bolt, but I think Shock and Doomblade are the same quality.
I think Doomblade and Lightning Bolt, and this has been discussed on the MTG show by Louis Scott Vargas, by anyone, they're considered, like, the balancing cards. Doomblade and Lightning Bolt were, like, we'll never see them in the current meta because of Snapcaster. Is it because Doomblade and Lightning Bolt are broken? No, it's because Snapcaster is just a really powerful card. So, like, saying that, like, it's not saying that this enchantment at 3 cost
is broken. I think it would be really, really, really powerful.
It would be powerful. I think there would be decks, but I don't think it would be even the number 1 deck. And even if it was, I think there would be a number of other competitive decks around it.
I'm saying, like, I don't want this card to be even the top 10 deck.
I don't think there's any harm to it being a top 10 deck card.
I don't think this is the type of deck that you... I want this. This type of card is made for players that want to try to break it. They want to try to find, like, the perfect amount of cards.
I'm saying you're still going to have to do a lot of work if you want to do a massive combo and break it. Otherwise, three drop leaves it early enough that you can use it in kind of a control-y deck where you're using discard as a control and get value. I don't think there's a type of card
that you want to put in like so many different decks that has like
such
powerful cards.
I don't think you're going to be getting it out of so many different decks.
I
think you could get two decks where you use it as a control-y kind of as a control piece to your control deck.
I really think it should be a build-around card that is more casual friendly. I don't even think from a design perspective you want
to... So if you want...
I think the same thing. I think this is more of a casual...
Well, yeah, but I'm saying if you want it to be super casual, yeah, make it 5-drop. If you ever wanted to see any play in any competitive format...
Well, obviously, the more aggressive it is, the more it's
going to
see...
But I'm saying...
The only time you're going to get the full value out of this card is that you have discard cards where you have the choice. If the opponent has the choice, that's where you don't want to
be. And most of those discard cards where you have the choice and the best ones are all at 1 and 2-drop, which should come in after this card would already be played, which means you're... And what the advantage to that is... It's usually in later games, Duress, Inquisition, and Kozlak.
They're useless.
They're bad top decks.
Yeah.
But now they make
it makes them slightly better. So, yeah, having them as a turn 3 enchantment's not the end of the world. And you know what? Even as a turn 3 enchantment, you might see this in the Liliana Spectre decks and all those ones where you see Liliana's Crest. I still think it's going to still be mostly a casual card at 3 enchantment. A casual card that excites a lot of players.
Mm-hmm.
And... I still think in standard at the time, depending on what in there, and only if there are tools for it, could end up in the top 10, and I don't think it'll ever make it into modern or legacy at 3. I don't think it'll ever make it in there unless it's too costed. And it's going to be lots of fun. I mean, think about Pyro Chief's Ascension as a one-cost enchantment that just blows up in like 1 or 2 turns. That gets ridiculous. But my opinion is, I think 3-costed would make a very strong enchantment. You're saying, and basically what you're arguing is make it 5-costed so it's so casual that it's only for fun and that it's never going to see competitive play. Why bother making a card for the entire community?
I think it should be a build-around card. I don't think it should be like, I don't think it's the type of card that should be like, oh, well, I need to have this card in my control deck because I can just use this like Rakdos Return thing because it's already good itself. Siren Sanity is already good by itself. Like, using these cards that work fine by themselves, and I have this extra piece that just
takes
it over the top.
But then you're also taking out extra pieces that keep you alive until that point. So.
I see this card more of as like a more fun, janky, casually friendly build-around card.
Well, you forget that there is a huge part of the community that are competitive players, and they wanted the card that they designed.
So I think a good medium between like, you know, the 6-drop possibility storm card versus like the 2-drop fuck your face card. Like, I think 4 is fine.
4 is going to be a really weak card for competitive play.
I think 3 is fair, and 2 would be a powerhouse. I think it will be printed 4.
Yeah, I expect it to be a 4, but I think 3 would be a reasonable cost, and 2 would make it a powerhouse like the next Snapcast or something this time, possibly. Possibly depending on who could do what with Standard and Modern Legacy with it and what tools were around it in Standard.
I don't see Modern Legacy even... 1 in this card, maybe even 2.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
There's so many good 2-drops.
It would blow up in Standard.
They would blow up. And then 2-drop... And
you don't play anything in Modern and Legacy. Like, an enchantment that doesn't do anything for you in a format that's so fast until you can play it on turn 3 and get it at turn 4 is like, well, you're dead.
It really is a build-around card because most of the abilities, like, when you really
John's at that point
is
already playing Emrakul on your ass.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I want this to be a casual build-around card. Yeah.
I still want to just float around in competitive
cool
play every once
was,
in a while.
If it was competitive play, and I'm sure we'll find people
the
that
the type of card this
it.
Is never going to see competitive play unless it's aggressively costed.
But there are so many cards that are enchantments that are just not that good that are costed at so much higher.
Yeah,
and they frustrated me. That's one of my biggest problems with why I wanted to land over an enchantment is because I think when they're enchantments, because they're permanent effects, people tend to, like, especially in R&D, tend to overcost them because they don't want ridiculous things going on.
Yeah.
And then we never get to really play with these cards unless for that one crazy guy in your playgroup that gets to do these really weird things sometimes.
But that's what these cards are designed for those people to love.
But this is a card for the entire community, not for, like, this small sliver of people who want to try and break the weirdest community.
I think one of the biggest parts of Magic is to have these type of cards exist. And then we're like people like you, dude.
Well, yeah, even then, that's why I love Blood Chief Ascension, which is a one-cost enchantment. Pyro Chief's Ascension, Luminarch's Ascension, or whatever. All these really fun... Well, Luminarch's
like
Ascension
casual,
is pretty straightforward.
Younger part of the community say, oh, I can make like a cool Curses deck with this card.
Yeah.
You know, or something like a bunch of cheap cards.
That'd be cool if it was actually a curse and you targeted one per opponent. But anyway,
but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think we can all agree to disagree.
Yeah,
on this,
yeah,
and
but
move on.
I think it's the philosophy. Like, fundamentally, is that I think like the way Magic appeals is to like a large, or maybe like a more casual community, and I think you want to see more like competitive tournament mm-hmm. right? with every
yeah.
card.
Yeah,
I'm not saying every card, but at least float up in there somewhere. I'm not saying it'd end up in every.
So you want a good portion of rares that have competitive tournament viability.
Yeah,
I think they should be fun.
Yeah, okay.
And casual, but there should be like a sliver card should be very strong, very high power level, but not every card should be equal power.
I just think that this card brings so many interesting interactions between you and your opponent because it makes thinking on both sides, and I think that's the kind of thing that we want to see. Through all levels, including up to competitive
Magic.
I think Mark Rosewater has commented that he wants more of those kind of interactions. If you want to put that into competitive play, make a card like this 3-costed and enjoy the standard format that it's going to make. And then if there becomes a real problem, make enchantment hate cards, and you can always figure out a card to go around it. Yeah. But, alright, so our next topic would be... Mike?
I mean, we were talking a little bit about Sire Insanity before,
yeah.
which is like a new...
Yeah.
It's a new Dragon's Maze card, and Jordan hates it.
Jordan doesn't like it.
I'm not crazy about it either.
When I first saw the card, I saw a 6-drop that empties my hand. First of all, 6-drop screams control or later game play to me, which means
it's
the card that's
living. It's really mid-range,
yeah.
I'd say.
It is a mid-range card, but as a 6-drop, you want it feels like it should be in a later thing, but later decks... decks that play for a later game style are usually the ones that want the card advantage and not to empty out their hand. So, I think
balance.
A very wise man who plays a lot of formats and has played forever, almost since the beginning of the game at my card shop back at college, said a very good thing. So, when I saw the card initially, I didn't like it. But he said, because he initially was with me when it was spoiled that, because two people were arguing about it, that the card would not be very good. And then we all know that it jumped up in price, it was played in Jund, it's been played. He stated it that this is the kind of card that's going to fluctuate in price a lot because it's going to be one of those cards that takes a meta by storm. It pops up in a tournament, blows it out because no one's expecting it. People start to build around it, realize what's going on. It fades off the map. It disappears. And then when people forget about it, it comes up and blows up again.
But that's like any good card in Standard essentially does that.
I mean, a lot of them will stay in there forever.
Like, you have... Like,
I don't...
Like, in a tier of cards, you have, like, the Jason Mind Sculpt versus Tarmogoyfs. And you have, like, the Snapcasters and that, and this is, like, the third tier cards.
I think it's fourth tier, almost. Third tier, above that, I would, like, an Arbor Elf and stuff, but they're not as valued because they're, like, commons and stuff. But it's a four, like, when the meta's not ready for it, boom, and then everyone's like, oh, okay, yeah, this card exists, and then they get around it and stuff. So
it's tough playing around this
and
card.
And I think, going back to a regular argument, I think Revenge of Necromancy could be one of those cards at 3-costed, but I'm going to end my argument there. But... You think it's a really good card, and I could see if you cheat it out as a mid-range deck and blow out your hand really early by turn 4 or 5,
like,
and you get this out on turn 5, maybe 6.
As it exists right now, you have a lot of, like, really early game plays, and then you could finish with this card.
And yes, it's a do-or-die for control. Control either basically counters it, removes it the turn it comes into play, or removes it before they end their next turn or they die. Which I think is really great. But there are two control decks in the entire format. And yes, they've gotten better with Dragon Maze, but they're not.
This card effectively ends a lot of control strategy.
But it's also... It aids
puts pressure.
I think the two best decks in the format that are competing against each other are Jund and Junk Reanimator.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Jund card that does well in Jund that helps Junk Reanimator. This card will kill... The Junk Reanimator will... Excuse my language. Jizz all over you in great gratitude when you play this against them. Yes, you'll sideboard it out, but it's a really bad card to get in your first match against them, and you have to leave it sitting in your hand. You can't play it, which means you have a functionally dead card in your hand.
I don't know if that's
and
true.
That's the deck is Jund that you're looking to be. It's Junk Reanimator. It's the next powerhouse in the format. So I don't think that adding it into your deck list is a good decision, because those are the two powerhouses
that
you're looking
to be. But now you're talking about playing the meta. I'm talking about
this card is a good card. This
card's
all about playing the meta. Like... It's good card situationally depending on what the meta is, and it's not good in the current meta.
I think it is great in the current meta, because you're effectively...
Here's what I can see. I see it as a $2 sideboard card against control for Jund.
That's exactly
where I see it. And when it first came out as a $7 card that got shoved in the main list of Jund...
Cards are always inflated when they first came out.
Yes. I tried to get rid of mine as soon as possible, and I still have one floating around, and I'm like, fuck me.
I think it'll be a $4 or $5 card that's essentially like almost a save one Jund. It's very, very strong in Jund.
I don't think so.
It doesn't do a lot for you. It's just a 6/4 beater. I mean, most aggro decks are going to run out their hand, and by the time you're getting to 6 mana, you've already taken the game over from them, and those are your biggest ones. And then a lot of the other... like, because once Jund will roll over a lot of those decks, and so this card doesn't help them get to the rolling over point. And then the only other deck it has to worry about is basically, like I said, Jund Reanimator. This card only helps them. And yes, against Wolfrun Bane, it's a big deal. It hurts Wolfrun Bane a lot. But you know what? Wolfrun Bane has a ton of removal for it. And Wolfrun Bane gains so much life, and they have so much card advantage that they'll eventually get rid of this card. They'll have enough life to stabilize, and they'll get back to it. Yes, so I agree, it's a problem for Wolfrun Bane. Again, sideboard. Sideboard against Esper Control. Sideboard against American Flag.
I think you almost always play this turn 4, turn 5, right?
Yeah, and so...
pretty much, like, I mean, unless you're playing a turn 4, turn 5.
And Wolfrun Bane's not looking
to... it's usually like a 2 of.
Yeah, but Wolfrun Bane is going to deal with it. It's going to get dealt with in Wolfrun
Bane. I mean, even in an aggro deck, you're running this turn 5, turn 4, I mean, you effectively just won.
Aggro decks already has then, no then, hand. Like, if you got into, like we just said, you're looking to take control over from turn 5. If you're getting this down on turn 5, you're already going to win regardless.
So you boarding your Thragtusk.
Yeah, so you take, and yeah, so Thragtusk is a better option against aggro than this, which is already run and Jund. This doesn't give you much advantage to anything except for Wolfrun Bane, Esper Control, and American Flash, which is, it's a sideboard card. It doesn't give you anything.
I think I would start my deck with this card, like 2 of.
For what decks? What decks are you going to run into in the meta? What decks in general are like, this card does well against control and some combo-y decks and cards that like card advantage, which aren't very popular in the meta.
But there's a reason that's not popular in the meta. So let's say you take this card out, then you open the floodgates for those decks.
Those decks have been low in the meta since, in fact, they're finally coming back into the meta thanks to Dragon Maze. They've only been getting stronger thanks to Dragon Maze because of a lot of cards.
Control was one of the best decks in the meta prior to Dragon's Maze. It's like not the second best deck.
I want to say it was popular in the meta. The two best decks since Return to Ravnica has been around have been unconditionally Jund Reanimator and Jund. Those two decks have been
Jund
the
Reanimator down. Actually took a little bit of a hit in Gate Crash. Actually a big hit. It wasn't really played.
People still held on to the deck because
they had it.
Yes, it wasn't as strong, but it was still strong. Yes, so Esper Control may have come up, and if we're talking about yes. But at it's a sideboard card. It hits. It literally only helps you against 3 decks in the entire format.
I could actually see this card being played in like a Faithless Rites deck too.
Oh yeah. Oh, and I think it was great. Like that's where I think this card has a great suit for. And I've thought about this before.
In a Faithless Rites deck, Reanimator
decks and any Rites deck, this would be great. Splash Rites, get your Faithless, get it out. Drop out, discard your whole hand, and just keep going.
And then they have no answers to you.
And keep blowing.
And it's perfect, and those decks are already mid-range decks.
Yeah, just keep going. This is a perfect fit for that. So, yes,
this card is a good card.
It has a very niche deck for it. There are a lot of decks that...
I don't think development even meant for Unburial Rites to be that big of a deck.
I don't think so, but it happened.
You know what I mean? It happened, and I don't know if they expected it.
I don't think it's like the end of the world. I think the Rites deck is interesting.
It's interesting. It's kind of like Delver. They don't expect Delver to take over.
But Delver was frustrating, whereas Rites is interesting. I like it. I like what's going on with it.
I think sometimes I feel like Rites
I hate
is
playing
a
against
push.
It sometimes.
Thragtusk is just too just a bit pushed too far, which ruins Rites.
The thing is with Rites is the problem with Thragtusk is it's just so much an annoying card, whereas there are so many cool other flavorful creatures and like
that
big,
you wish
cool
to play with 5 slot.
That could have been played in the right. You're playing Rites, so you could play a lot of like bigger creatures even, but the problem is like why bother when you have a Thragtusk? And Thragtusk makes that deck too consistent because even if you don't Rites, you can always just play the
Thragtusk. Because the
Rites
is just a 4 of.
Yeah.
And the Mulch and the Grizzly Salvage always give you equal card advantage.
Yeah. So
it just sifts through for you and increases your hand size.
So I think Rites is a interesting deck. Thragtusk makes it a little pushy. I think Siren fits really well into that deck. So yes, there happens to be a deck where it fits really well. And again, Rites is going to rotate soon. Otherwise, outside of that niche Reanimator fit deck where you need to discard your hand, its best spot is in the sideboard for mid-range decks against control decks.
Do you think a card that has to be an auto-included sideboard is a bad card?
No, But I don't think it's as great as a lot of people are. So I've noticed that there's a big divide in the community. A lot of people are saying it's terrible, and a lot of people are saying hyping it like it's fucking the next thing. It's the next. Well, no one's saying it's the next Snapcaster, but they're hyping it like it's fucking amazing.
Like it's a pseudo Titan.
Yeah, and it's not. It's a sideboard card. Let's be real. It's a sideboard card, and its price is going to reflect.
I think there could be a meta where this card's really shines.
There's a lot of rares that there could be a meta where it's really worth it, and I think you're going to need to respect that. And this the best part of this card is teaching people to watch your meta and look for where cards need to come into play. Mm-hmm. So
you really don't think that a normal mid range deck would not want a two of those cards.
It doesn't. It's only a 6/4 body that doesn't do a lot for you unless you're playing control.
But you don't one. You, in if, fact, if it's a two it hurt, of, you don't always have to play it if it's a two of. Yeah. If you have it.
But like the thing is, most of the time always, it's gonna hurt you because you're gonna have more steam in your hand than you are against aggro.
Not in the mid range. That's where you want to end. Dump out your hand.
Mid range on mid range. You get a 6/4 body, and now you're both running with main hands, and you're top boarding. So it's basically whoever has bigger, like, five drops and
but
whatever.
You get to choose when you play this card.
Yes, you get to choose, but
But
then you're saying that you're in a lot of matchups, you're just going to want to hold on to it. And, like, a good card, you're not going to want to hold on to a lot of times. You're saying, like, why not just sideboard it for the few decks that it's good against? It's good against control, and it's good against a few other decks, and it's really bad against a couple other decks, which means it's perfect sideboard card, except in rights where I think it has a real niche spot. Like black red rights could be cool. Otherwise it is a great mid-range sideboard card.
I think it's a good mid-range card.
I wouldn't go that far. If there were like four control decks in the meta and it was going crazy or a bunch of combo decks,
The reason there isn't four control decks in the meta is because of this card is a major point.
No, the reason there isn't four control decks in the meta is because Esper and American got it covered. American's not even true control because it's a much faster game.
The current American Flash is pretty much control right now.
It's pretty controlly, but it's a much faster version of control with lower drops,
two Snapcasters, and like Planeswalkers and spells. That's
yeah,
control.
It's been pretty controlly. Well, the American Flash that I'm normally seeing is
you're talking about Resto Angel Snapcaster each other a whole bunch of times.
But I still wouldn't even venture. I don't think that you'd have a lot of other control decks. I mean, Bug Control could exist, but I don't think Siren of Sanity is the one stopping them. I'm just thinking that because if you want to play control, Esper and American Control are better control ones right now. And it's got a 4 butt. It's real prone to removal.
Yeah. But how are you going to remove its sorcery? You can't.
You have
the best removal right now. Like some of the most played removal is sorcery speed.
Dragon Mage is changing that. Dragon Mage is changing that.
War Leader Helix
is like meant perfect to blow that fucking card's ass off. It's literally.
I mean, there are cards that balance it, but Mizzium Mortar is not going to touch it. And that's what mid range decks are really worried about. Mizzium Mortars.
Mizzium Mortars can hit that bastard their turn.
Just comes to hand immediately.
No, at end step. So you kill it with Mizzium Mortars that turn.
It's sorcery speed.
Yeah, yeah. You play it, right? You pass the turn, they draw their card, Mizzium Mortar.
They have to top deck their card.
No. Because they have. They didn't counter it, so they didn't have a counter spell in their hand, they didn't have any form of instant speed removal, and then they didn't have Mizzium Mortar, then you know what? They were screwed to begin with, because they had no removal and no counter spell. They were already losing.
Both players discard their hand at each draw.
Each end step.
Oh, both players? I thought it was you discard
no,
your
hand. No, it's both.
Okay.
So you can't, you can only get it with instant speed. Sorcery speed removal is fucked.
So entirely, all of your creatures are immune to sorcery.
Okay,
people, so your board wipes can't really hit you.
I still think it does the most work against control. So you're like, what you're saying basically is you're good against control.
It's really good against control.
Yeah, but I don't
think
it's
a perfect card against control.
I don't think it does much more other than a sideboard card in those situations.
A lot of mid range, like some of them will run Mizzium Mortars. That's not a
But like, then what's the point? You going top deck mode against two mid range decks is just who's going to top deck better.
So you wouldn't play it unless. So that's why you run two of, and you play it when you're ahead on board.
If you're ahead on board in the mid range matchup, unless you're like down a lot in card advantage, there are just so many other cards I'd rather have in the main list. Like, it's so situational in that mid-range on mid-range. Like, it doesn't... Like, what I'm saying is it doesn't help you establish a better board state against that mid-range deck.
I think it does.
No, because you drop your 6'4 body that is, like we said, can be top decked for a lot of removal. You both discard your hands. They still had the better board state, right? And now you're both in the top deck mode. Let's say you put a 6'4, but just putting that 6'4 body down evens out your
board.
Your board.
You pretty much would win the.
Well, you both have even boards, and then it comes down to whoever tops decks. That's putting a lot of luck into the. Unless you're a really lucky player, I don't see why you'd want to do that.
I mean,
I'm just. That's my opinion. I think this card. Again,
I think we're pretty close to where, like, closer than we think we are.
Yeah,
how
I
we
just,
think about this card.
I just feel like I would never main 60. I think this is meant for 15.
I think it's a 2 of. So we're between 2 and.
I think it's a perfect 2 of in your sideboard. I think it's got this card can do so much work in those few matchups, and then it's so good in the sideboard, but main board. It feels so dead sometimes.
It's still a fine. It's never a blank.
I disagree. I feel it blanks a decent number of times.
I don't think it even blanks against aggro. 6-4 with a body for 6 is still fine.
You drop a 6-4. Yeah.
Turn 5, it's, you know.
But I could drop a 6-6 on turn 5 that does other things.
But I'm saying, like, you have to have that card ready for other decks in the meta.
There's 3 decks. A combo deck and the 2 edge. It doesn't. I don't think it really is an advantage in mid range.
I think it's a huge advantage in mid range because they play a lot of sorcery speed removal.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, then they could play that against you too. I mean, I just.
So that's why. So if they play that against you too, that means that card
could. It doesn't help you because then you lose all your sorcery speed removal that you could use to be killing off and establishing your board state.
Like, it's balanced enough where it's not going to.
I will agree, it's a real balanced card.
It's really well balanced.
If you said it had a 6-6 butt, it was a 6-6, I think it would be.
That would be Snapcaster level.
I don't think it'd be Snapcaster level. I would agree with you because then it would be big enough that it can keep itself alive and start beating people in the face and doing its work. But with a 4 butt, it's really easy just to double block and kill that motherfucker. And it's prone to Thragtusk, which you're saying is a mid range. And so you block. You're now in top deck mode. You can't swing at that. You block with their Thragtusk. They still have a 3-3. They have established a better board state than
honestly,
you.
When I think it's, like, I wouldn't think to ever attack with him. He's,
well, so
he,
then
he's made to have
so
his
he's,
effect. Like,
so
well,
he's
but,
an
but,
enchantment.
But
I'd rather have him as an enchantment.
But you could choose
he
to attack. Let's say you don't want that effect anymore.
Well, I don't
want
a
6-cost
enchantment
with
that does that.
Let's say you're like, oh, well, I need to draw cards now. Why don't I start swinging with them? That's great. He gives you options.
I mean, a 6-cost enchantment is, like, not... That
it's
has
not,
this effect is not very good. Not being able to attack with him is a huge disadvantage.
Let's say your opponent's thinking, alright, I want to start drawing cards to beat this motherfucker out. You can keep swinging in with him, and it'll be like, well, you know, I'll take card disadvantage to get this guy out, so I can start being in better top deck mode to draw something to wipe them out.
What a card I was surprised, which was underrated a lot, was Rurik Thor.
Rurik Thor is a good card.
I think it's on the same level as Siren of Insanity, and it does a lot of the things you want it to do, and yet it doesn't
play at all. It fits well in a Gruul aggro deck, but it's costly for a Gruul aggro
deck. I think it does well in mid-range deck, too, because it's a 6-6 body that can block everything you need to block, and it doesn't tap to attack, it's attacking when it needs to, and when your opponent deals with it, they take 6 to the face. I honestly think you should, if
does
you
it
want...
Does have haste?
No, it doesn't have haste. Neither does Siren. I think...
But Siren affects immediately.
Yeah. Siren does affect immediately, but I think...
So it's removable.
I would much rather put 2 of these in my main board and put Siren, and I would switch the 2 of them out depending on the man. Actually, against control, having both of these in there, devastating. Devastating. Absolutely devastating. Not only do you have to discard your whole hand to start removing either one of the two, if they're both on the board state, you're taking 6.
But you got to cut to add. I don't know.
You do have to cut to add. I don't know the deck list for Jun well enough.
Right,
but I think Rurik Thar is underrated. A lot of people say he doesn't have ace, he doesn't do anything, he doesn't affect the board state. I'm like, you deal with him, you take 6 to the face. Mm-hmm. That's
is
a big life
swing.
Only
when you deal damage to him?
Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you take 6 to the face.
Isn't it 3?
It's 6. It is a 6-6-6 card. It is a 6-6 that costs 6 that does 6. It will do 6 damage to an opponent before it leaves that battlefield at some point. Okay.
Of course.
I don't know. Like
I like him.
Is it legendary?
It is legendary.
Yeah,
it's legendary. But you never want more 2-0 on the board. You're never going to have two signers of insanity on the board if you're running them as a 2-0.
Yeah. But
and then that's the best part. Oh, did you just kill my dude? Oh, he works well with the new legend rule. It's just something we should talk about, too, the new rulings. But you just dealt with him. Oh, guess what? I had another in my hand. Get ready to take 6 more.
Yeah.
And get fucked.
I just feel like there's...
He's not Obazet, but...
Yeah,
he fits in the Jund deck well. I think he does what
he
wants.
In the Jund deck, he does fit.
Fine, at least throw him in your sideboard.
It also hurts your removal ability, too.
Again, like you say, you
play Mizzium Mortars.
You put them in when you need to, but like if you're playing your Abrupt Decay and your Mizzium Mortars are much cheaper and meant to deal with earlier threats and stuff. Like they're not going to hit. Like you're not going to hit most of the control deck thing. Even. Yeah, but the thing is,
you're giving up a lot.
Are you really? Because you now have a 6/6 beater on the face, and now you're just stocking your removal, and it's going. They're the one who has to deal with your guy first. Unless they drop a huge bomb, but there's not many bombs that can deal with the 6/6.
I agree with you that he is underrated, but I think he's he feels more like a limited bomb to me than a standard.
I mean, he's a blowout and limited. No
he's doubt.
That's what I'm saying.
A 6/6 for 6 in limited is a blowout no matter what. Sort of attaching effects to him.
Right. Yeah, no, I played against this guy in limited. You automatically win if he's on the board for 2 turns. You pretty much win.
If he's on the bar, if he resolves, you win.
I mean, we might see him. You know, Dragon's Maze is fairly new. It's slowing down the format a little bit, and maybe
I think
he
fits in Jund well.
Maybe
I'm over inside of it.
I'm gonna look up this deck list. I don't know. I just can't see it.
I feel it. But anyways, so what we were talking about too is for those of you who don't know, and I believe the rules act July 1st, right? Is that
somewhere
when
around that?
Sometime in the near future, we will be seeing that the rules have changed. The legendary rule has changed, and
it's
the uniqueness for Planeswalker. Basically,
we'll get to. We're gonna take a quick break, and then we'll get to the legend rule. We'll have the exact rulings up.
I know the exact rulings.
But we're gonna take a quick break.
Take a quick break.
Breaks are for bitches.
We're taking a quick break.
Take a quick break.
All right, we're back from the break. It's been a rough break. I lost my leg in a Revenge to Necromancy argument.
All right, now we actually have to do it.
all right, not funny. Anyways, so like we said, the last topic of the night will be the rules changes that will be effective sometime in this summer that I don't like, Ashwin likes, Mike, I don't know.
I like a couple of them. Alright, well let's start. The changes are effective July 13th, and they're effective on Magic Online July 24th. The first one is a legend rule.
Well, we can explain this. It's the same thing for the Planeswalker uniqueness rule, which is the next change.
As far as the legend rule goes, anytime two or more legendary permanents with the same name are controlled by a player, that player chooses one of them, and the rest is put in their owner's graveyards as a state-based action.
So basically, the legendary rule only takes side of your battlefield. So both you and your opponent can control the same legendary creature. Reasons for this change is they didn't want this whole using clones as kill cards for legendaries. They didn't want that legendaries don't do anything except for kill each other. And just like they wanted legendaries to be in play with each other more. I don't really like it. It's not as flavorful. How can you have two creatures?
No, the flavor is screwed up, and I don't think anybody can say that it's a flavor gain. Definitely a
and also,
loss.
I feel it's a simplification of the rules, which makes it easier for new players, and I feel like every time we get rule chains, like changing how damaging stacks and everything, it's simplifying for new players, which as a new player coming in, I definitely appreciated having simpler rules for some of them things. But as I get back, I'm like, oh, this change on the damage stack could have been really interesting to abuse back in the day, or I don't really like them. But I don't like the loss in flavor. I don't like the ability of losing clones to kill legendary creatures because there are some really stubborn legendary creatures that are really hard. Sigarda, for those of you who play Commander, there's a number of hexproof legendary generals.
Geist.
That like cloning is a legitimate method to kill. And yes, it's not very blue or flavorful or make any sense that like
the
cloning.
Well, that's definitely a net gain for that. The fact that blue does not want to destroy.
Yeah,
blue is not a destroy. Type of, and the fact that these clones kill the most epic, most like recognizable creatures of magic.
I feel like you could have changed the ruling that the clones have, like, clones enter the thing and they copy the card with everything except for they have that this is a clone of whatever, and then you could have two legendary creatures at the same time, because that would be flavorful. They don't kill.
That's clunky. Too complex.
It's clunky. It's complex.
It's not. Yeah. It's making rules for the sake of, you know. You're sacrificing conciseness.
There's just some things we're losing in the gameplay. I mean, they're going to say that you're going to get a lot more interactions in gameplay, but there's a lot less things you have to think about now when you put out your legendary. You don't have to worry about them killing it off. And so with Planeswalkers 2, now both you and your opponent can own a Jace Planeswalker, so they can have Mind Sculpt, and you can have Jace Architect the Thought on the battlefield. And the way... And what I really don't like is you get to choose which one of yours gets buried. So, for instance...
You can play Deuce 2 Planeswalker.
So, if you play... Chandra Narla, and you use her abilities, and then the next turn you use her minus two ability and, like, bring her really low, you can then play...
Get the counter reset.
Play the next Chandra, like, a Chandra Blaze, and then choose the Chandra Narla to go to the graveyard.
Reset your counters.
Yeah.
Plus
or
one.
Or if they pacify, which was a huge thing, a lot of legendary creatures would get pacified and just sit there. Now you can just play your other legendary creature and blow out that one, which... It's I get it. They don't want legendary cards and Planeswalkers sitting in their hand. You want them to be played. But at the same time, there's a reason they're legendary, and there's a reason why they're Planeswalkers, because they're really powerful. And
I don't
so,
know
like.
If that's...
Okay, yeah. Tibalt. I got you. I got you.
No, not even. A lot of Planeswalkers, they're more flavorful than powerful, I'd say.
Planeswalkers left unchecked are a problem.
Right, but that's why, you know, they have their checks, right? Like, they have.
The checks is the other player now diverts most of their attention onto the Planeswalker, or is like, wow, I'm aggro, and now I guess I'm just going to try and really kill you or lose.
So my first major opinion about this is that I don't think it's going to affect the majority, the overwhelming 99% of the gameplay that people will have. It will most likely, clones aren't that big in very popular formats.
Commander is going to get really thrown on his head.
I think this is a huge benefit to Commander.
Well, yeah, two people can play with the same general.
So,
or you can play a legendary creature from your deck, and someone else, if someone else has it as a general. Yeah, but clones are a good way of killing generals,
want to essentially be able to dig for generals in a deck where, you know, this is a huge general, it's popular, dig for it, use it to kill it?
I mean, I love using clones to kill, like, the new Taysa, because she's frustrating to deal with, or using it to kill a Geist the same trapped or whatever. Figuring out how to get around dealing with them.
But now you're using the old design that was designed for the old mechanic, right? I think it's more about the space that it opens up for the new ones.
Well, what I do agree with was one of the biggest benefits is it makes... They agreed that they were not going to make any more legendary lands except for, like, Eye of Ugin and the Witch.
And those are clunky, too.
And they clunky, yeah. And because there's a lot of reasons to do legendary lands and stuff, and so they think that this is definitely going to be a massive advantage for using legendary lands and being able to print them again, which they're excited about. And, like,
that's cool, man.
I can see that.
Also,
it also makes sense with lands because flavor-wise, you don't actually have that land on your battlefield. It's your connection to that land. And so, like, two players can definitely draw from the same space in the universe, but, like, you can't have this. You can't have Geist of St. Trap fighting on both sides of the battlefield for both players. There's only one of them.
No, but I'm saying
he's not an Arbor Elf. There aren't a million of them running around.
Listen, I'm not saying that the flavor is reduced, but the bonus in gameplay that you're getting out of it's so much nicer. And you want, like, from the design perspective of the people who
make
the cards.
Yes, it makes it easier on R&D, but I'm not here to make it easier on R&D. Play the game.
No, it's not.
I still feel like they're losing a lot
of gameplay. Richer gameplay is that. These creatures are so recognizable. They're like the emotional attachment to the player is to these legendary creatures, and suddenly their value is so much less just because the other person can do stupid gimmicky stuff that isn't really inherent in the rules text. Like, it's just it takes a lot from a player's stage to learn that wait, you can just copy my guy and then he dies, and this epic dude that I have this huge like emotional. Thing too is useless now.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's learning the game. And yet, well, I also don't feel bad to you because your huge, big, giant guy was probably beating me in the face. And the reason my clone exists is so that I can clone my big or your big creature and reestablish the first thing.
And I think perhaps you can even open clone design space. You're going to put more aggressively costed clones or maybe different types of clones that are more fun to play with as opposed to the three blue copy target creature. Whatever. I mean, it's just I think it's interesting.
I
at the very least.
Do you think
maybe I'm just really holding on to the old rules, but I'm not a fan.
And also, I think it's a misconception that games with less pieces are easier to play. Like, some of the hardest games, like Go, chess, they have very, very finite amount of pieces and very simple rules, but they're some of the hardest games to master.
I mean, I agree.
I don't think that simplifying rules makes the game easier. Or less challenge, or less complex to... Like, there's huge complexity in Go and chess.
Yeah. I mean, and this is just, like, you know, one small rule. I feel like it was just...
But it's a very noticeable rule. Yeah. Like, when it comes up on the battlefield and when you're playing, you're going to notice it.
Yeah.
It's not like the next rule we'll discuss, but...
The next rule is the sideboard rule, which is...
Oh, I hate that.
I love this rule.
It's just like... Alright, I'll read it out.
I think this rule makes so much
okay.
sense.
I get why it so you don't get the freaking lose in a high tournament game.
Yeah, it makes sense, but it's just like, okay, yeah, alright, whatever. Your main deck is still 16 or more cards, but your sideboard is now up to 15 cards. Additionally, you are not required to swap cards between your main deck and sideboard on a 1-for-1 basis. For games 2 and 3 and so on, as long as your main deck is 60 or more cards, and your sideboard is no more than 15 cards, you're good. It's just, you can't have more than 60
basically,
cards turn round one, and your deck can have up to 15 cards. There's never a time where you're not gonna want to play, like, less than 15 cards. Like, oh, maybe I should only have 10 cards in my sideboard, so I'm less flexible against all of them.
I think it helps, like, a lot of beginning and new players that are just throwing cards together in a sideboard and want to have a few cards in their sideboard, but don't have a full 15-card sideboard.
I don't think you get DQs and FNM for this, even, but it's just, like, it's just nicer, just easier, like, alright.
But,
DQs, GPs.
Here's why they invented the rule. Basically, a lot of players would get DQ'd because they would sideboard...
Deck checks, they fuck it up.
Yeah, they would sideboard in 6 cards and take out 5 by accident because they forgot to take out an extra card or whatever happened. And so they would run a 61-card deck DQ'd if they got caught. So, under the new rule change, that's not a DQ. Now, that's not to say that you can go start with a 60-card deck and then go down to 59 cards and have 16 cards in your sideboard, so you can only increase your deck size. Which... In all honesty, we all know that you want to...
99.99999 in repeating percent, you don't
want
to do that.
Yeah, you want as slim and mainstream of a deck. I mean, unless you're running Battles of Wits or something. Everyone runs a 60-card deck. You don't want to run a 61-card deck. Every once in a while, you'll see a Pro Tour list where someone runs a 61-card deck.
But it's just like, weird. If you want to be a smartass, you can now. And I like that.
I mean, yeah. If you want to be a jackass...
Then do it.
You literally could just run, like... 4 or 5 lands in your sideboard and then 10 more cards and then throw all or 5 of the lands and 10 more cards and just literally turn your card into a 75 deck card deck for, I don't know.
Let's say in a fucked up meta, there's one deck that does land destruction and you just want that one extra land just to get you there to 161. You know, it's your call. I wouldn't do it per se, but I don't know.
I mean, this rule is not the rule I thought we were going to address next. This rule doesn't really bother me. I think it's. Nice
I think it's. Day. I think it's easy. It's simplifies
it. I don't really care. I think basically
I
this
think
is
a good change.
This is to help new players and cover the ass of someone who makes a human mistake. So you know what?
Yeah.
Fine. That's cool.
And it gives options.
It gives options.
Even though they're not good options, it's still options.
It gives not good options. So it's not breaking the game or like be doing stupid stuff. But it gives options, which always is like, and I love my options.
Okay.
Like my options.
The next two rules are small ones. Indestructible is promoted to a keyword.
Makes sense, I like that.
Yeah, and unblockable is not a keyword.
And unblockable has been defined as never going to be a keyword because there's many forms of unblockable, including, like, island walk is very different than cannot be blocked by creatures with lower power and stuff, so they're keeping those all separate. It's not a keyword. A lot of people had assumed up to this point that indestructible is a keyword. I think I did.
It was, yeah. I mean, I think... And there's another, like, new player thing, is that sometimes the word indestructible is not clear what you mean by it, because it's like, you know, your negative counters, does that work?
Yeah.
Damage work? Does destroy effect?
In fact,
the effect?
Indestructible was very intuitive, and they said because that indestructible basically means the same thing as
it does
in the English, is you can't be destroyed. In fact, it's only going to hurt new players because they're not going to have all that extra text. It's literally just going to say indestructible. And they're all...
No, but the... But the whole point now is that when something is keyworded, it gets explained in corsets.
Oh, does it? Oh, well,
that's what corsets does.
Well, because when it's keyworded, it's not explained on other cards outside of
corsets. If it's a lot of rules text,
yeah,
then the keywords typically won't get explained. But right now, indestructible is
never like, because flying is not explained anymore. Like, oh, there are cards that used to explain.
I think some keywords are just
death touch almost, is not explained anymore, but it used to be.
I think some cards do have death touch explained, actually.
Well, those are probably, like you said, corsets.
Corsets.
Basically, and you still have to explain to newer players that, like, indestructible means that you can't be destroyed. That does not mean you cannot be sacrificed. It does not mean you can't have negative one counters and blah, 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 blah. But learning the game, indestructible, we all know what it means. Whatever rank they want to give the word, they gave the word.
Yeah. I think the simplifying it for new players is great.
Absolutely.
Last rule change, not a fan of. This is the one I thought we were going to talk about.
I'm not a fan of either, the land play rule.
So basically,
this rule's dumb.
I think it takes away from the complexity of the game and little interesting tricks that people are doing.
Yeah.
But basically, you may play one land a turn, nothing new. You play a card that says you may play an additional land a turn. So you play your land, you play an additional land, and then all good. So what some people did, and under this, is you play a land, you play your additional land, you bounce, say it's a creature, bounce it back to your hand, replay it, you now can play another additional land, because you can play an additional land per turn, and all those effects go away. What it is now is you keep track of how many lands you played a turn, and basically it gets rid of all the shenanigans and stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, because in a normal turn, you can only play one land a turn. And now you have a counter called the land play. So you always start your turn with one land play. And then you can play a card that gives you an extra land play for that turn. So you have two land plays. But if you bounce it, you bring it back, you play two lands, you bounce it and come back, you don't get an extra land play. Because you already played the two land plays that you had for that turn. So you can't, like, exploit little stuff in certain cards, and I really don't like that. I like it when you are able to exploit little things and abuse cards a little bit, and, you know, it kind of takes that fun away
from it. I mean, this really affects such a small, small percentage of the
game.
Yeah,
it does.
But it's still, like...
I have a couple of questions for you guys for this one.
Okay.
Do you think that it is because they're going to print more of this kind of stuff? For future sets, that they wanted to just get it out of the way now?
I feel like it was annoying some judge or something. There's a lot of git rules that are actually implemented because they've been annoying. So I think this came down to times that it comes up where judges are like, all right, explain your turn to me again.
No, but I'm saying...
Because there's two players arguing about their land.
Does this open space for play an extra land of certain cards?
I don't think it does because they never affected that to begin with. All it does is it makes it easier for the judge to do it. Because I don't think R&D was sitting there going, oh god, there's all these bounce effects. We got to be real careful about these play extra turns. I think it came up
somewhere. No, I'm saying, like, now that you couldn't exploit it, does it make it so that...
But I don't think it was...
Like, we're going to see...
I don't think it was ever an R&D...
That's my question to you guys. Yeah. Do you think we'll see more cards?
Yeah,
I don't think we'll see any more than we would have before, because I don't think it was ever an R&D's head that this was getting
pushed a little more. Like, you saw Urban Evolution,
which
is just a fine card.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But that had nothing... There was no creature in effect that was a static effect.
I mean, you think that was like a test run for maybe one of those newer cards? I don't know. I'm just asking.
I mean, maybe they'll print a creature in M14 that says you can play an additional land.
Or the expansion set. Okay, yeah. Like, you know, play an extra land this turn.
I really don't think so. I think it's never been in RD's mind that someone... In fact, maybe someone in RD was playing like that. I think what it came down to is I feel it's been frustrated enough judges and been complained about in enough meetings that they addressed it just because they're like, it's not worth the headache of dealing with.
I
think this is, it's not worth the headache of dealing with judges and going back.
I still think it opens design space too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think R&D ever cared about that.
No, of course. I'm more than positive they've definitely thought about making more into this mechanic one day or another.
It's an interesting...
Well, yeah, but I don't think their concern was ever, do we bounce? I'm sure there are people that are pro in R&D that were pro using that abuse trick that wanted to make more cards specifically to abuse things like that. Mm-hmm.
But honestly, yeah, I think this might be a note into if they're going to print some more cards like this that you can draw an extra or play an extra land that turn.
You might be right that it might be a note.
Like a preemptive.
Yeah. Because the reason it came up is because they have cards in the works for it. But
like what if they had a format, you know, like their future league, whatever, that they had this card and they were like, well, like this could really be abused.
Yeah.
in these Eternal formats.
So I don't think it means that it's opening up space anymore, is that it may have come up because they were already considering and putting in these cards.
Also, by doing that, it opened up the space for that card to be released.
I guess.
I mean, M14 is being spoiled right now, and maybe we'll see a card or two like that, you know, pop up, or maybe
in the Theros. Green, blue, whatever.
Yeah.
Not green. It'll be in green.
Yeah.
The only blue part of Urban Evolution was the draw.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's the end of the rule changes. I think we're going to wrap it up here.
Yeah.
So thanks for watching, guys, or if you're listening, thanks. We're doing a visual podcast now, so we'll probably we'll try to keep it more updated and
more concise sometimes.
Yeah,
maybe.
You know, we'll see how it goes. But follow us on Twitter at MetaBrookMTG. That's what it was, man. It's been so long since we've been on the Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Facebook, too, at Meadowbrook Magic. We'll post links in the description because we have YouTube now. So, and make sure to send us your decks because we're planning to do another Brews Day Wednesday soon. And we'd love to talk about your decks.
And we'd love to even flesh it out if we can, or if it's a cheaper deck. Like Popper would be fine.
Yeah, any kind of deck you want to talk about, you know. You want to show us your deck, your new standard deck, or your pauper deck, commander, like anything. Yeah. It'll be, you know, it's fun to talk about.
Except we're going to be cubing, maybe even game recordings or deck techs, live deck techs.
Yeah, we're probably going to upload our YouTube, update it some more with some deck techs, some games and stuff. We might even record some Friday Night Magic stuff.
So basically what we're getting at is hopefully there's a lot of new content coming towards you.
Good content.
Stay fresh, enjoy, and comment about how wrong Ashwin is about everything I've told
fuck
him.
Yeah, make sure, tell Jordan's a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Boom!
Yeah. But make sure to comment, subscribe, like, all of that. And see you next time.